This is Whiskey and Risk, a J. Crew podcast where we talk about all things risky while drinking a little bit of whiskey. I'm Max.
And I'm Jackson. Let's get into it. Cheers.
Welcome back to Whiskey and Risk. I am your host, Max Katzbeck.
And I'm Jackson Doyle.
And today we have a very, very special guest joining us, Gabrielle Gabs Maruka. Gabs, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining the show. Gabs is the interim co-COO of Titan Solar, headquartered in Phoenix. We'll get into that. She does a lot of really cool roles at Titan, and I've known Gabs for ever since middle school. So it's awesome to have you on the show. I know you're a very, very busy person, but thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Of course. I'm excited.
We'll dive right into it. Today, as always, we are drinking a nice bourbon. We've got one of my personal favorites today, Woodford Reserve, just the standard Woodford Reserve that everyone is pretty much familiar with, I would say.
So we were actually talking, me, you, and Cooper, before we started recording, that I think on an episode early on that we recorded and rated Woodford Reserve Double Barrel Oak.
Yes.
So something a little different. This is a staple at the office. They can't see, but we have a 1.75 jug here of Woodford Reserve. So we have the full handle here. It's more than halfway gone. So it is a staple here. So we drink it fairly often. I'm going to give it just a solid 7.2.
Yeah. Okay.
Right in the middle.
Gabs, are you a bourbon drinker in general, whiskey drinker, or are you just doing this to appease the show today?
I like it. Really, the only thing I've ever dabbled in is when we're at somebody fancy's house and they're like, oh, this is my favorite drink ever. That's most often scenario when I'm tasting these kinds of things. It's not my drink of choice, but I definitely can appreciate the good taste. And I just took a sip of this and I think it tastes good, but familiar. So it's not some crazy wild different flavor, but it's good. Surprised, actually.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put it at?
I'm just going to go safe where you guys say around 7.
Okay, around 7. And that's pretty good for someone that doesn't traditionally drink bourbon or whiskey. So appreciate you drinking with us. And this is great to have you on. I'm a fan of Woodford Reserve. What proof is this? This is a 90 proof. So it's a little bit smoother than like 100 proof. Overall, I really like it. I'm going to go a little bit higher. I would say maybe 7.9.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go 7.9.
High 7.
I think you guys are swaying me in the 7s here. It's good. It's a good go-to. I think any bourbon drinker probably has this in their cabinet. Old Faithful. So looking forward to diving in this bottle. And just for the record, it is half full or half empty, however you want to look at it. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Gabs. I know you've heard her voice. You've heard her review. But Gabs, why don't you take a couple minutes and tell us a little bit about Titan Solar as a company and your role at Titan Solar?
So Titan Solar Power started in 2013 under the name Titan Solar Power. Previously, the contractor existed as PM&M Electric. One of our co-founders was the son-in-law of the gentleman who owned that entity. When they decided they wanted to start solar, this is David and Kyle, the co-founders, when they decided they wanted to start it, they were like, how can we do this easier where we already can have a vendor name built out that has some credit and has some rapport with it and has a license? And so they sat at a dinner table. I've heard the story so many times. They sat at Ken Williams' dining room table, and that's David Williamson's father-in-law. They basically worked out this whole business plan, and the two guys just started out doing solar themselves. A lot of YouTube videos and practice and things like that until they really could learn the ropes. And then from there, it just took off. They were like, wow, this is an untapped market at the time. It just grew super quickly. Within the first 5 years, they're a multi-million dollar company. We've at this point exceeded $1 billion in revenue. And so the growth has just been crazy. They started in Arizona, expanded kind of on the West Coast-ish, Southwest states, and then now we're in 26 states nationwide. The growth was extremely rapid.
Yeah, that's awesome. Obviously, knowing you personally for so long, I went down to Arizona State and saw you join the company early on. And over those years, just the growth of Titan has been unbelievable. I think it's a super, super interesting story. Started 11 years ago, barely, and over $1 billion in sales. One of the lead companies, contractors in the country. From your company standpoint, I know there's a differentiation between the sales and the contracting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Titan is more on the contracting side, correct? So the actual installs?
Yep. That's been one of the, I would say, reasons for the ability to expand so quickly. Our sales partners. I mean, ultimately, you know, we use third-party sales groups and dealerships that we call them, and they send their guys out. They go do the canvassing and the door-to-door and all of that to get the sales through the door. And then from there, we just do what we do best, which is install and install quickly, good as we can, and hopefully leave the customer with a happy new solar system.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many employees are at Titan?
Currently, we're sitting right around 1,000. We have been all the way up to around 1,700. The reason for the dip is just seasonal and market conditions. The industry as a whole was very unregulated at first, so it was not a lot of people in it, and then became oversaturated with everybody trying to take advantage. So it's now leveling out. There's a lot of different factors to solar in general.
You've mentioned that now there's some more competition in the marketplace. So what are some of the differentiators? You're obviously first to market, getting in early, but some of the things that separate you from your competitors to make you one of the best solar companies, if not the best solar company in the country.
Definitely. This is totally relevant right now too, especially because there are so many competitors and it's really driving home the quality is where we're focusing at and dialing back the scale in order to improve and ensure our process efficiency and reassuring our customers that we are the best option. There's a lot of promises out there that other companies are making. There's a lot of going into new markets without verifying conditions, without any expectations, without doing proper due diligence. And we battled with that a little bit when we grew so fast. So now we're taking this more conservative approach where we're really dialing that stuff back and reassuring our customers and our sales partners that they should be working with us because we really have everyone's best interest at heart because we don't just have one customer. Whereas a lot of these other guys, they do. They have a lot of customers and you might not be their number one to please.
And I think it's interesting too, when you talk about the separation from your sales partners, which is, it's unbelievable to have those good sales partners in your corner and focus on what you know how to do best. But the separation between the sales and then you coming in and doing all the contracting work, I just find that an interesting aspect of it. Do you think that's common in the marketplace or are some people trying to do it all? Or
I'd say it's definitely becoming more common. I think that for a long minute there, we set a big example of how you could do it. We've even had instances where people that had only sales dealerships, they went out, found somebody that could hold an electrical license for them, and then they just decided they're going to start installing solar. That may be working out for them in the short term. That may be getting glass on the roof for customers. But again, it's that quality. It's that long term. We've offered all the way up to a 25-year workmanship warranty. No one else comes close to that in-house. And in certain markets, like that changes. There's better options. But ultimately, that is more relevant now than ever is everyone's trying to do that same model and think they can do it all. And I feel that we're losing the quality aspect of it within the industry and we need to get back to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There might be money in it for the short term, but overall doing things that are right and in the best interest of your customers is always in the long term going to be the best way to do it. And that's pretty similar to how we do it at J.Crew. Obviously, we're a much smaller operation than Titan. We're about 40 employees here, but it's really developing not just a quick buck and trying to get rich. It's about building that long-term relationship with your clients so they're not just transactional. It's a long-term deal and you can really add value. You might not be the cheapest option, but you know you're going to do the best for your client, whether it's in terms of coverages or advice or on your end, the installation and just being there for your clients when they need them, not just a fly-by-night or anything like that. Gavs, I guess in terms of your experience, like I said, I've known you for a very, very long time, but how did you become the interim co-COO of Titan Solar? Why don't you tell our listeners about how you got to this position?
Yeah, started with Titan. When I started with Titan, I was actually working full-time at Starwood Hotels corporate finance office in North Scottsdale, Arizona, which Starwood Hotels, I don't know if anybody is familiar with that brand. They then were purchased by Marriott. So they've now been thrown into the Marriott entity. Basically, at that time, I was working in payroll there in their corporate finance office, getting through college, I worked there all through college, graduated. My brother, actually, James, he came out from Colorado. He had worked in electrical for a number of years before this, and he ended up getting a job when he moved to Arizona at Titan Solar. He called me up one day, is like, you do something with numbers, don't you? And I'm like, I mean, I guess, what are you trying to find out? And he's like, well, our accounting department at Titan, they really need help. They need an extra person and you do stuff with numbers. So you should go meet them. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm on a contract with them till this sale's done or whatever. Starwood at the time. And so I was like, I'll go have the conversation. I was still a few months out. Well, I went in and had the conversation with the manager of accounting at the time and the CFO, Kyle. And they were like, can you start tomorrow? And I was like, engaged at the time, so couldn't turn down the opportunity to make an extra dollar. So I ended up taking on that position part-time after my full-time job at Starwood. So I started doing for Titan for probably about 6 months or so until my contract was up. Starwood.
I didn't even know that, actually.
6 to 3 Starwood, and then 3 to 7:30 Titan for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. But just showing you, like, I would go to the office at Titan 3 to 7:30, and there was people still there. The work ethic of the people that started Titan, the people that have been at Titan through all of it, it's been insane. It's been insanely motivating also.
That's awesome. This wouldn't be a Whiskey and Risk insurance podcast without getting into the insurance side of things. And I know Jack's the property casualty side. So Jackson, why don't you dive into maybe some of the property casualty side questions for Titan?
I more so just have some fun curiosity questions about solar too that might have a tie to insurance if we could go down that avenue. So you guys are headquartered in Phoenix or just outside of Phoenix, which makes sense for the solar industry out west with the sun and what you guys get there. But us living in Illinois, it's sunny for about 15 minutes and then cloudy for about 2 hours and then sunny for 15 minutes, if you're picking up my drift. I know you're in 26 states. Talk us through how you guys decide where you're going to operate and where it doesn't make sense, not only purchasing solar, but two-tiered question. I ramble. I do this. Is there also places you avoid based on weather and claims and things of that nature of hail that's going to mess up a solar system? Kind of talk us through the process of choosing where you're going to do business.
Yeah, I don't know where your listeners reside, but we do have a Titan Solar Power Illinois branch, and it is located in Joliet, relatively new, but we're picking up operations there, and it seems to be going good. One of the challenges just with Illinois, since we're on the topic, was the city of Chicago. They want the license holder, so whoever actually physically holds our qualifying party for the license, they want them on every inspection in the city of Chicago, which is just operationally really challenging. Time constraints. This person may also hold licenses for other entities in the area. Like, we also operate in Missouri, Kansas City, and so in St. Louis. So we have a few different qualifiers that hold regional licenses, if that makes sense. For that example, until we got to a good enough amount of volume to see the inspections and to see the delay that that caused, we couldn't really decide or determine if that market was good or not. So just up until recently, we decided, okay, we're going to do Cook County, but everything except for Chicago. For insurance and risk, there's so many different factors. Typically, the way that a solar system is sold is through a lease or a financed loan. And so each of those companies, depending on who we partner with for funding, they have separate parameters and they have certain things that they want and they have certain materials we need to use and all of that because of things like you mentioned, hail, weather, all that. For example, the wind rating on panels in Florida needs to be very specific as opposed to Arizona. There is no wind rating. You can use whichever ones. So things like that, that definitely are challenges we weren't aware of until we really got into and got some momentum in these markets. And there's definitely places that there's stricter laws for the customer. There's stricter laws around sales. For in Nevada, for example, January 1 of this year, they passed a new bill that requires all salespeople selling anything in Nevada to be a W-2 of the contractor. And so in which, you know, that doesn't work for our model. So we've had to really pivot and make huge decisions operationally. It's not a one size fit all. And so depending on the strain and the risk versus reward in some of these states, we have either decided to subcontract out our installs. We quality control rate those and things like that. That's one of the ways that we've mitigated a lot of risk in a few areas is using subcontracted work where we don't have the brick and mortar presence. And we test the market with that and see how it goes from there and determine if we need to gear up and we need to get the building and we need to get the fleet and we need to get a service presence and all of those things. So we tested out with a subcontractor model initially, but again, depending on the market.
That's super interesting, the Nevada thing too, because I mean, you never know when a law is going to be passed, and it's not a new industry, but solar is relatively new. So, I mean, you could be dominating one market and then Nevada one day goes, hey, you have to be a W-2 employee, which is obviously the opposite of what your business model is and your business model works. But in that situation, it's like, hey, do we completely remove ourselves from this territory? Or yes, obviously you're finding creative ways to get around it. And you've got those quality assurances with those subcontractors. I'm sure they all carry their own insurance and, you know, there's proper risk transfer with that. But that's super interesting. Another thing that I wanted to hit on is just the wind rating in Florida. So I would think Florida in terms of a solar state would be a great market. But from the insurance standpoint, what we see is just the amount of storms, hurricanes, things like that, where I could see it being an issue with those actual solar panels. Most of our insurance carriers don't even want to write in the state of Florida anymore because there are so many claims because of that weather. So that's another interesting thing that I picked up on, the correlation between insurance and solar, if you can make any. That's one that I thought of. In terms of when a hailstorm or a hurricane does come through in those markets, is that something that you would come out and then fix, or how would that work? How often are solar panels being damaged once installed?
That is really up to Mother Nature as far as natural storms and things like that go. But I mentioned we have contracts with warranties. We offer certain warranties on workmanship, roof penetrations. Most of our materials are warranted by the manufacturer themselves. So if they malfunction for any reason, those can usually be fixed with that. But yeah, we do offer complete solar service as well. And so we go out and service anything that needs. But typically, yeah, we would send somebody out. They'd look at it. We would normally advise the homeowner, if they own the asset, to do the loan, to use their insurance to file a claim. And again, that's a little bit of one of the trickier things. We haven't exactly ironed out the solid go-to process for that, as every claim's a little bit different. When our insurance gets involved, when to
self-insure.
When to self-insure, exactly. What happens if we're hauling the panels in a trailer up a hill and a hurricane comes? Where exactly does that claim fit in? Because the panels are damaged, but they're not installed. The different pieces of the project as well, and what stage they're at, have also had an impact to our insurance liabilities, I would say.
Oh, super interesting. And that's what we tell our clients. There's no clear cut. Every claim's different. We put you in the best position as your advisor to make sure that those coverages are in place when you need them. But there's some things that just aren't covered by insurance or excluded, and there's no way around it. So every claim's different. It's just a matter of really doing the best you can on the front end to limit your risk, minimize your risk, turn it into an opportunity. And then if a claim does happen, it's kind of up to the carrier and the adjuster to decide where that coverage falls. And for us, we're always an advocate for our clients. So we're going to do anything we can to make sure it's covered, but it's a contract. There's so many different things that can happen that not everything's always going to be covered. So
before we fully transition off of the sales piece of that, talking about the new laws and different things like that, and I know you said there's outside sales reps that kind of help stir the business for you guys. Wanted to talk about prospecting and what goes into that for your guys' business model of what you guys are looking for in terms of where you're going to have success. Is it markets with rising energy cost rates? What's going into areas that you're like, we can really come in and make an impact to the market?
There's so many factors. It's hard to just say that there's one, but we're currently working on, myself and my counterpart, the co-COO, who his name is Doss Porter. He's great. He's actually way more experienced in the field operations and things like that. I'm more of the back office. So he and I are actually working on, and the operations team, obviously, working on completely revamping how to determine what partners we use and where. Typically in the past, a lot of our partners have been small mom and pop LLCs that are just two people wanting to walk around and see if they can sell solar. As you know, depending on the market, it sometimes not going to work out for them. we don't have a set determination of what qualifies a partner to work with us. And so those are the things that we're putting into place. And as we've realized, let's say one partner worked for us in Texas, just because they have a presence in Illinois doesn't mean that they can sell in Illinois as well as somebody based out of Illinois. So I think we're looking for those more built out entities that if we do have presence in multiple states, they're compliant, they're aware of the sales licensing, the sales requirements that are in those areas. In Ohio, I believe it's Columbus, you need to have a certain license to even be going door to door there. In Maryland, you have to be linked as the salesperson, you have to be linked to our qualifier's license, and you have to be able to provide proof of that to even go to somebody's house and sell something. So I think the bigger thing that we've learned is making sure that that responsibility is on both the contractor and the salesperson to ensure that we are using best practices nationwide. In terms of markets, what ones are good and what ones are bad, honestly, you can sell solar in any market.
Makes complete sense. The idea of solar is interesting to me. I've lived in Illinois my whole life, and so it's not huge out here, but you only see people with solar panels on their homes and things like that. But then you travel out west or different places, and it's that house, that house, that house, that house. It definitely sense more where you're at, but at the same time, I think anywhere, like you said, anywhere solar could make sense.
I'll just touch on that too. I think that's a common misconception about solar is that it has to be sunny all the time, but it really depends on what your system consists of and if you know how to use it properly. So that's the other thing that we as installers and as the service company that will service your system for the remainder of our contract, those are the things that we make sure our customers are aware of. And that those are the things that with our sales model, it's a little hard to battle because we don't have control over what the salespeople are saying. So if they're saying, hey, you can get this tax credit, you can get this utility rate buyback, you can get this huge incentive for blah, 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 blah. I would just encourage every person that considers solar to really do their own research within their own state to see what kind of things are eligible once they have a better idea of what the system they want looks like. Batteries, inverters, a lot of things have a lot of different ways in how your system functions. I think the biggest thing is storage that people have a problem with. And that is completely dependent, again, on the utility companies. They come up with the regulation. We're going to let so-and-so store this much with a battery. The rest needs to be pushed back to the grid. When you push it back to the grid, you get X amount of cents per watt, and we'll credit that back on your utility. You may not see it right away. Depending on how quickly we do our job as well, those cutoffs can be missed. For example, so like at the end of the year, a lot of regulation changes with utility companies and state regulation changes annually, if not sooner. And those things largely impact. So at the end of December, we're trying to make sure we're wrapping everything up with those jobs to make sure if somebody was told they're going to get something back from their utility, we want to make sure they're eligible to get that back. Again, it doesn't mean they're going to get that dollar amount back, but we try to make sure that we do everything timely so we maximize the benefit of what buying the asset does for them.
Especially with your model too, which is, like I said, I'm a firm believer in doing what you know and what you're good at, and that's how you're going to be successful. But that is an interesting point with your service partners. It's probably hard enough making sure or keeping tabs on that when it's a small local company. And when you grow as quickly as Titan has to multiple markets, what are some of the things that I guess you do with your partners to make sure that they're providing maybe a constant message? Or because at the end of the day, it's independent contractor or separate company that you're partnering with. So there's only so much control, but what do you do, I guess, to keep everything uniform? Because you look at McDonald's, that was the thing about McDonald's when they started was, hey, we're going to start this one location. And then the next location wanted to do a little bit different. It's like, no, this is McDonald's. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to make every patty the same. We're going to put the same amount of pickles on it. How does that tie into what you do?
We've definitely organized our operations to be a little bit more conducive to that, to keep consistency. So for example, our headquarters location really does the administrative and all of the things besides the physical field installations. We do that all from the same place. Those same people are doing all of that. So our designers, you may have one sitting locally at a branch, but like they're using the same processes that we're using at headquarters. And so all of the design processes, all of the processes, the utility applications, all of those are being housed from the HQ. And so that's one of the ways we keep consistency with it, is not letting each branch stray off into their own. Now, obviously, we have tweaked processes depending on the state, but those decisions being made locally at HQ that really keep that consistency. And then additionally, we do some scrubbing of our own of the deals that come through, the contracts that come through, making sure that they have what we're licensed to do only on them, making sure sales groups aren't doing any promises, making promises they shouldn't, things like that. We ask the customer on a phone call, were you promised anything that is not written in this contract? And so we keep our own processes. And again, those have been recently throughout the years developed to what's finally, we're like, we have to find a way to manage this. And so we also do construction reviews. We do build with design. We do bills of material. We just make sure that everything is using the exact same process across the board, even though it's different in each state.
That's got to be a lot. But I mean, obviously you do a great job at it. So kudos to you and the team.
Our team, honestly, it's amazing. There's so many new people. We grew so fast. There's so many experts. We have multiple license holders. Like I said, I think that core thought of doing everything with excellence is really shining through now. And especially when people are now, they're getting their solar systems that are 10 years old. Now we're seeing, oh, hey, actually, we are providing the quality rather than these guys just throwing everything up on the roof and walking away and leaving it for the homeowner to deal with.
That's awesome. I agree. Okay. So in terms of on the business insurance side, we've talked about different procedures from an operational standpoint, but when it comes to the actual insurance, obviously every business has risk. And I think that the nice thing about insurance is the ability to have a product that turns a risk into a potential reward where you can go out a little bit and make those calculated risks that you need to make, but also have that financial backing through insurance. With a company of your size, I guess, when you think of insurance, when you think of worst case scenarios, like what's the thing that keeps you and the rest of the management team up most at night from an insurance standpoint or something that you use insurance for?
Workers' comp and auto off the top of my head. When you have a thing that we do of 500 plus vehicles out on streets everywhere from long country roads to really tight Chicago city limits, you have accidents. We've looked at ways to limit that as well. And the maintenance on the trucks and all of those things are factors into our overall safety program. Auto and workers' comp, you guys know in the insurance industry, those rates increase yearly pretty much no matter what. And that is because those are just uncontrollable. And we have guys up on the roofs. We have them following OSHA. We have serious safety protocols. We've, over the couple years, we had probably, just throwing this out there, probably doubled our safety presence crews to ensure that we're following all the correct protocols, making sure that we're really doing that. We have one lead on every team now. So there's one senior person. We have field supervisors. We have regional field supervisors. We have just layers and layers of ways to catch these things and try to prevent them from happening. We've also done in the past, we've done events for field service. A couple of years back, had a field installer event where it was all sorts of challenges that we turned into games. Just wrap somebody up in a harness, who can do it fastest to the best quality. You get a hat and you get a this and those kinds of things to promote fun and everything. And that was, I believe that was even on a Saturday. We got our installers, it was completely open for their friends and family to come be a part of this, take place in the activities that were all safety and compliance related, but really just to make it fun and get everybody on board with these things may seem tedious in the moment. Again, best interest for everyone.
And I think especially with smaller companies, it's like, hey, here's my insurance. It's something that I need to buy. How cheap can I get it? I don't even want to purchase it. You start talking about risk management. It's like, I don't want to spend my time doing that. I just want to make my widgets and move on. And I got bigger things to worry about. But I'm sure that might have been even a learning curve from you. I mean, starting with two guys 11 years ago to 1,000 now doing $1 billion in sales, especially with a fleet that size. I mean, I can't even imagine what you pay in insurance premiums a year, but it gets to a point where you realize, hey, it's one thing to buy this insurance and, you know, it's not a sexy thing to buy. No one really wants to spend their money on it, but you have a couple big claims that save your butt and probably keep your business in business, where if you were uninsured, you would be out of business. That's very important. And you start looking at things like risk management and safety programs and doing the things that you're talking about. And then when you're able to directly correlate that to your actual premiums, but not only just your premiums, just the quality of your employees' employment, that they know they're going to work, that they're safe, that they've got the proper coverages in place, or that they're being taught the best practices. And then if you can actually quantify that, that's where I think it's interesting talking to a company like Titan, where you are heavily invested in the risk management side. And as I'm sure you can see, it definitely makes a large impact avoiding those claims in general.
For sure. Yeah. Because one large claim, it's like credit, in my opinion. You miss one payment, your credit goes all the way down. It's the one bad claim, and now your risk profile is a lot larger. You're a lot more risky. And again, I'm not an insurance professional, so don't, you know, hold me to that. But that's just the way it seems being involved in it for so long. And the premiums are expensive, but the good thing about insurance is that you can request an audit on most policies, especially right. All workers' comp and GLs.
You are an insurance professional.
Oh, yeah. We've learned a lot through the years in seeing how claims impact us. And also when determining and getting the right professionals in positions to determine when to utilize insurance is huge. And I think that's another misconception. People think, oh, I'm insured, it's fine, I'm covered. But it's like everything has a lever. And there are times where it's the best business decision, best decision for the customer, best decision for you to utilize the insurance. And then sometimes there's not. There's a lot of different factors, your deductible, your rate increase, all of those things. And so hiring people that really understand how to utilize insurance, I think is really important. And that took us a couple of years to figure out, again, because of the rapid growth. It took us going through some painful claims to realize, oh my gosh, this is a big problem. Or, wow, we're really great in this area. We are doing everything as we should be. And so I think it goes both ways.
Anything you want to touch on, Jackson?
He sounds pretty fluent in the whole process. So that's nice to hear, especially for as large of a company as you guys are. It makes sense.
You've always got a job here at J.Crew.
I will say next time we have a podcast or a meeting, we have it at your headquarters.
We should have done that. Yeah.
We are a stone throw away from the biggest airport in the Midwest. So yep. We can make our way there.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Let's do a second one maybe in like January of next year. I think that'd be perfect.
Yeah, or second week of February.
Okay, cool. So that's all very interesting. Thanks, Gabs. And then what I also wanted to talk about too, the other side of what we do is the employee benefits. So from your experience, how do you, I guess, leverage benefits is more of a fun thing to talk about than your traditional workers' comp GL because you're actually benefiting your employees. Not only are you just paying it and hoping you don't use it, but you're using it as a tool to attract and retain your employee base and even yourself. Everyone wants great benefits. And just through knowing you, my best friend CJ, your cousin, works at Titan. So I hear about Titan all the time and some of the benefits that have been offered over the years. But I guess to start, how do you balance your benefits program? Everyone wants the best benefits with the cost. And I'm sure that evolves and changes as you continue to grow, but what goes into that?
Ultimately, with employee benefits, because we started as such a small company, we didn't have this huge, robust benefit option. It was pretty standard. It was like two packages, very simple. We didn't really revisit that up until recent years. So we held steady with what we were at. We do offer one thing that we do, which I think is really cool. They offer a $10,000 life on every employee, no matter what. That's included, not an optional, not an enrollment.
Employer paid too?
Yep, employer paid. Yeah, so that's really great. We've definitely got a great 401k program. We've put a lot into that. Our demographic of employees largely is installers. It's young males in their early 20s. They have a whole family. They're supporting their whole family at home. So dependent coverage is really important for us being able to offer that affordably for the employees. And it's ever changing, kind of like you said, but the 401k match is huge, definitely for all the guys that dream of retiring. They actually offer up to 7% match here.
That's insane. We do a good amount of 401k business too, and that is a very, very generous offering.
Yeah.
And if you're not matching it, make sure you match it.
I'm matching it. We've offered a lot of things. One thing that we've commonly been asked for in the past is an HSA, a health savings account. That is something that I think families often utilize and one of the bigger requests. So it's actually just something we started offering this year. But that is the only change we've made to our benefits. So the rest of it is pretty steady just on the medical. And the more conservative approach has come from, we offer a lot of on-site benefits.
Those are the cool ones that I've heard about over the years.
So over the years, it's been a little obnoxious, honestly. I'm one of the people that really has never been able to take advantage of these because I'm always in meetings or running around and I'm like, oh no, I want to go get a massage. But so we've offered crazy things. We've offered meal prepping. We've offered health programs, free fitness training. We currently right now, because of all the organizational changes we've made and we've had a lot of different market changes and we've had challenges as we grew honoring those benefits amongst all branches. So it's forced us to pull back a little bit on all of those, which not all of our HQ people love because they're like, what do you mean? We don't get this and that anymore. It's an attempt to be fair nationwide and we want to treat all of our employees the same. And so we try to find things that gym memberships, but ultimately you can't find one of those in every location we are. So we started doing payroll reimbursements in those situations for benefits like that. We give people a dollar amount for using their personal cell phone if they use their personal cell phone. Get a fitness stipend thing. So if you want to pay for a gym membership a month, you can use it toward that. We've resulted into doing that. And then right now our main focus is being great at what we do. And so really focusing on the install operations again, but we will eventually get back to offering the cool stuff. We were doing a lot of in-office things like yoga class, and it was like 15-minute, 30-minute things.
Did you guys have car washes too for a little bit?
Oh, yeah. We still do offer that. The employees pay for that. But basically, we have a mobile detailing service that comes to the parking lot every Friday, and you can give your keys to the receptionist, and you can pay $30 for a sedan, $50 for a big SUV, and get it detailed in and out. It's pretty nice.
That's so cool. And I mean, those are the things that sounded cool. But I mean, obviously, you have a great benefits package. You talk about all those items. You talk about the 7% match. I mean, great place to work. You take care of your employees, which at the end of the day, that's all that matters. You want to attract talent and you want to retain the good people that you have. And through leveraging your benefits program, in addition to the great culture and the growth that you have, that's a great tool to do it. Obviously, as you continue to grow, you have to keep it uniform, like we talked about before. So you're always evaluating that. You don't want anyone to feel left out. So growing pains, but it's kind of a good growing pain to have. Yep. So,
and you can't please everybody. I think that's been one of the challenges is you can't please everybody. Somebody's going to be upset for what you do. So if you can please the majority, I think you can take that as a win.
And we see that too. I mean, on the benefit side or property cash or whatever it is, I mean, in any business, anything that you're providing, that's going to be the case. I mean, for us, we do a lot of client meetings, not only just meetings with the management team, but for our clients, we'll meet with the entire employee force. And you work a couple months up to that open enrollment meeting and you've got everything down and it's a really solid program. There's always going to be that one person that is upset about something. And if you can keep a 90% of everyone happy, I think that's the goal. And eventually, I think those people typically just like to be upset about something in general.
Yeah. When you order lunch for the office, that's a good example. There's always one person.
I didn't want onions.
I didn't want that. And it's just like, yeah.
Exactly. No, that's interesting. No, Gabs, this has been awesome, I guess. Do you have any other questions about the benefits side or?
No, I think that this has been really great. We obviously really appreciate your time. We know you're busy and it's probably ramping up now at this time of year. So we were excited to have you on as a guest. We were looking forward to it. And I think that the audience will love learning about it.
Yeah, this has been great. Yeah. I have one question for you, the leave-off question. What, in your opinion, and I just put it on a tee, so I wish it was a better question now, but what, in your opinion, do you think the future of the solar industry looks like? It's newer, it's booming, regulations are coming in, but what do you see the future of solar becoming?
I think if we can get rid of some of the bad eggs, I think it can be really great. And I think we're on the way to doing that. I think that we're experiencing a dip in the market, but amongst many other things, there's a lot of other economic reasons for that. I think we'll see it come right back around. And I just want to have Titan be ready to take it all on because these other guys aren't going to be able to withstand all the changes.
All right. Well, Gabs, this has been great. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you like the bourbon and cheers.
I do. Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Yep. Cheers.
Cheers.